So today we're going to answer the question, who is the Son of Man? In today's gospel, we have this wonderful story of a man who had been physically blind. And while it's true that he receives his physical sight, what St. John wants us to see more fully is he also receives his spiritual sight. And it has everything to do with this encounter that he has with Jesus. Now, you need to know something about this title, Son of Man. People never address Jesus using this title, but he uses this self-designation about himself in the Gospels 82 times. 82 times. You don't have to remember these numbers, but I'm just going to share them with you anyhow. 32 times in Matthew, 14 times in Mark, 26 times in Luke, and 10 times in the Gospel according to St. John. 82 times. And in the encounter that the man has with him, Jesus asks the question, do you believe in the Son of Man? And the man says, well, who is he? And Jesus says, you have seen him, and the one speaking to you is he. A point to make. Remember I said Matthew uses this title 32 times? Matthew is the most Jewish of the four Gospels, and so it's very intentional that Jesus uses this self-designation that often, because this title, Son of Man, goes back to the Old Testament, to the book of Daniel in the 7th chapter. Now let me outline for you briefly Daniel chapter 7. The first part of Daniel chapter 7 has these images that speak about the dominant world powers that were going to rule the world for over 500 years, beginning with the Babylonians, going to the Persians, then to the Greeks and the Syrians, and then to the Romans. And these are the dominant world powers. After these have been mentioned in turn, the writer Daniel has a vision of heaven, and this is who he sees. He says, I see one on the clouds like the Son of Man, and they are worshiping him. And then at the high point of the vision are these words. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. So when Jesus says, do you believe in the Son of Man? And then when he says, the one who is speaking to you is he, what Jesus is saying is, I am the fulfillment of Daniel chapter 7. Jesus has a kingdom that is eternal, and his kingdom has three dimensions. In heaven, it's called the Church Victorious. In purgatory, it's called the Church Suffering. And on earth, it's called the Church Militant. That's us. That's you and me. His kingdom is eternal. It will never end. And we are called to understand the role that we have as members, not only of his kingdom, but those who are then called to be sent out into the world to witness to Jesus Christ, the Son of Man, the Son of God. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the application. But we have to unpack this a little bit more. You'll notice in the passage that the religious people, the Pharisees, were divided between themselves. Some thought, this man's a sinner, that is Jesus. Others thought, how can he be a sinner? He just opened the eyes of a man born blind. That's impossible. And so they're divided amongst themselves. And the interesting thing is that they conclude by saying, well, probably he is a sinner. And the guy who's had his eyes open, he's been a sinner since birth. So we don't have to listen to them, even though the evidence is completely convincing. Now, here's the thing. In our day, it's not so much people saying, oh, Jesus is a sinner. We better not listen to him. But people who have heard of Jesus but don't really fully know him might say the following. Oh, yes, I believe that Jesus lived 2,000 years ago, and he was a very, very good man and a very excellent moral teacher. But to come to that conclusion is as erroneous as to say that he was a sinner. And my good friend C.S. Lewis puts it very succinctly in a book that he wrote called Mere Christianity. And in this book, he makes the following point. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things that Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic, on the level with a man who says that he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Now let's unpack this a little bit more, well, by thinking about me, just for a minute. Now imagine the following. Imagine I said to myself, Father Jonathan Gibson, you are the greatest Catholic priest in the Catholic world. And if I said, I am the greatest Catholic priest in the world, you would say he is one arrogant fool. But then say, if I said, oh, actually, no, I'm Napoleon, you would think, well, he's kind of beginning to lose it. But then if I said, I'm a butterfly, you would think I had embarked from the sunny shores of sanity and said, it's time to get that guy down from the ambo. But how about if I took the next step and I said, I am God? Well, at this point, you would say, there's something really problematic with that guy. We better help him before things get too serious. And here's the point that I want to make, that this is the argument in relation to Jesus. 82 times he says, I am the Son of Man. 82 times he says, I am the fulfillment of Daniel chapter 7. And he either is or he isn't. C.S. Lewis called it the trilemma. I'm going to show this with my pointer on the screen that is to my left, your right. Here's the statement. Jesus said, I am God. If it is false, it can be false for one of two reasons. If Jesus is insincere, that he knows he's not the Son of God, then he is a liar. If he thinks he is, but he's not, then he is a lunatic. However, if it's true, Jesus is God, then he is the Lord. So C.S. Lewis put it this way. It's called the trilemma. He's either the lunatic, he's either a liar, or he's the Lord. You've got to make your choice. And this is fundamentally important for us to understand because it's at the heart of what it means to be a Christian, as you'll see in a minute. But we want to consider one other thing. Lewis makes the point. Can you really say that Jesus was a lunatic or a liar when you think about the kind of man that he was? His practical wisdom, his ability to read human hearts, his ability to understand people, and even the real unspoken questions that were behind their words, his ability to heal people's spirits as well as their bodies, his deep and winning love, his passionate compassion, his ability to attract people and make them feel at home and forgiven, and his authority that was said was not like that of the scribes, and above all, his ability to astonish, his unpredictability, his creativity. Lewis says, liars and lunatics are so dull and predictable. But when you look at Jesus, I love this image of Jesus. It just speaks of the vitality, the energy, the clarity of his mission and his life. And so what we need to consider is the following. Given who he is, and given the man who had a conversion where not only could he see physically, but even more, he had a conversion of heart that he could see spiritually, what does this mean for us? Now, remember what Jesus does. He puts mud on his eyes. He then sends him to a pool called Siloam, which means sent. And then the man comes back seeing. What is St. John doing here? This is the sacrament of baptism. So all of you who are our elect, you'll be glad to know we did not put mud on your eyes. But your whole period of preparation over these months has been like that. It's to allow you to prepare for your baptism that's going to happen in 3 weeks. And then our hope and prayer is that as you're baptized, you'll come to see Jesus more clearly, as will we. But that's only the first point, because everyone who is baptized is called to understand that we are sent. That's what Siloam means, right? What's another word for those who are sent? They're called apostles. And so here's the point of our baptism. You are to be baptized, so you're going to go back out into the world and you're going to live as witnesses for Jesus Christ. And everyone who's been here and has been baptized and has been confirmed, this is our mission too. This is what it is to be the church. And there's a beautiful thing that we read in today's first lesson that I want to touch on now and then tie it into our reading from Ephesians. Remember, Samuel, who is the prophet, has the seven sons of Jesse come before him. And none of them are God's anointed. Oh, by the way, when you are baptized, you're going to be anointed. For those of you who are coming into the Catholic Church from other Protestant traditions, you're going to be anointed. And what's going to happen to David, the youngest son? He's going to be anointed. But get this point. What number is he? He's number 8. That the seven sons had already been brought to Samuel, and none of them are the anointed one. But the 8th born son is. What does the number 8 represent? It's the number of the resurrection. When we read about Sunday being Resurrection Sunday, it's called the 8th day. Here's the point. 1,000 years before Jesus was born, the prophet Samuel has an understanding that the anointed one is going to be the resurrected one. Isn't that remarkable? Isn't the Bible amazing? Look at what the Bible teaches us. Now, tie this in with our reading from Ephesians. What does Paul say at the end of that reading? Therefore, it is said, sleeper awake, rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. The point is this. The man who had been born blind and can now see physically and spiritually has been raised from the dead. We are people of the resurrection. We are people of hope. We are the children of light. And my beloved brothers and sisters, we live in a profoundly confused world. And what the church needs to be able to do in our time is to speak and love with clarity. We need, as Christians, to know who Jesus Christ is. And those of you who are the elect, we're going to help you to become incorporated in this parish. Far too often, people are baptized and then we never see them again. I don't want that for you. I want you to realize and to understand that this is the beginning of your journey. You're to walk and to live differently because you're going to be baptized. And everyone here is called to a deeper conversion, starting with me as your priest. We are called to an understanding of what St. Paul said in that reading from Ephesians, where he said, we are called to be children of the light in a world of darkness. At St. Peter's, we want to do this very intentionally. We are going to start in the fall a program called Alpha. Alpha has been shared with over 30 million people over the last 20 years. And what Alpha does is it provides a way for people who might know nothing about Jesus Christ to come into the light and to have their eyes healed so they can begin to see him. This is going to be an opportunity for St. Peter's to become intentionally a parish that has evangelization at the very heart of everything we do. Because what we want for St. Peter's is we want many more people here. Not just because we want more people here. We want more people here because we want them to come to see and to know and to love Jesus Christ. We want them to be able to come into the light. And in a world that says you can believe anything and live any way, that's a disaster. The only way that leads to purpose and meaning is to know who we are as sons and daughters of God, to know what it means to live out intentionally our baptism. So in conclusion, let me return to C.S. Lewis, who in the next part of that quote that I began a little bit earlier, he makes it even clearer about who Jesus is. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman, or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him, and you can kill him as a demon. Or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great moral teacher. He has not left that open to us, and he did not intend to. Who is the Son of Man? He is.